everybody. This is Pam coming to you from the podcast Women Who Stutter Our Stories, which can be found on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering, and it's also freely available as a download on iTunes. Today, as always, I have the opportunity and the privilege actually to speak with another amazing young woman who's going to share parts of her story. So I'm excited to say hey to Val. Hi, Val. How's it going?
Hi, Pam. Things are going great. How about you?
Things are good. Good. Sunday night. It's the end of the weekend. I always dread Monday coming so quick, but I'm good, and I'm really excited that we're getting this opportunity to get to know each other a little bit. So I'm psyched. Yes.
I'm very excited to tell my story so everyone can hear it across the internet. It'll be a great experience.
Yeah, awesome. So to get started, if you wouldn't mind, can you formally introduce yourself and tell us who you are and where you're from and what you're doing with yourself? And if you don't mind, how old you are, too.
Yes. Well, hi, my name's Val Ostergaard, and I'm 25, and I'm from Cary, Illinois, which is about 45 minutes northwest of Chicago. And I just graduated this past May with my master's in speech therapy, and I'll start my first job in the schools in August. So I'm very excited to see where the next road leads to.
Yeah! Wow! Congratulations! That's really exciting. What made you decide to get into speech pathology?
I actually started speech therapy way back when I was 8, and I never actually thought that I would want to be a speech therapist. But as the years went on and I got involved with the Friends organization, I really started to enjoy the fluency aspect of speech therapy. And I started to question and think about it a little bit more, and if I wanted to work with kids who stutter, which is my ultimate hope with getting my speech therapy degree. And then when I actually went into college as a nursing major.
Oh, really?
And my first semester, freshman year, I took an intro to speech pathology course and then changed my major from nursing to speech pathology. So it's been an exciting road that kind of unexpected, but not really in a way, so.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned...
threw my mom for a curveball in college because she always thought I was going to be a nurse. So when I told her it was different, she was a bit shocked.
Was that because she always wanted you to be a nurse, or because that's what you had thought that you wanted to be? Or was it a combination of both, maybe?
I think it was a combination of both because there's a history of nurses in my family, actually.
Oh.
On my dad's side, so I've always talked about being a nurse and working with kids. So if I went into nursing, my hope was to work with kids as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I switched to speech therapy, I kind of had the idea that I wanted to work with a kid then too. So she wasn't too shocked since it's still with the kid aspect, but a little bit surprised, but she's happy for me, so. It all worked out.
Yeah, yeah. Now you said yourself that you started therapy as a child at 8 years old. Is that when you started stuttering?
That was when I remember starting private therapy with Kristen Camella. I was actually in private speech therapy and therapy in the schools. So I had about over probably 3 hours of speech therapy a week, because I saw Kristen Camella for 2 hours a week at the beginning, and an hour, 2 days a week, and then I also had speech therapy in the schools with a speech therapist then too. So I had a lot of speech therapy for a while. So I was kind of like bombarded.
Was there a particular reason why you had so much therapy? I mean, was your stuttering particularly severe, or that's just what your parents thought you needed, or?
It was what I've been told, and I don't have the best memory of it, but I remember it being very, or I remember and still hear about it being very severe back when I was a child, and I had a lot of secondary characteristics where my eyes would be closed, and I wouldn't look at people. My eye contact was terrible, and as well, I've been told that I had a lot of oral motor stuff going on too, where my tongue wasn't strong enough and going in the right places for speech. So we worked on a lot of that and speech with Kristen as well. So there's a whole lot of issues that I think were what the stuttering that had to be worked on too.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of speech.
Yeah. I mean, do you remember what that felt like as a kid doing so much speech therapy? I mean, did it impact, like, you know, like how other kids treated you? Did they know that this is what you were doing, or do you kind of not really remember much of that?
I remember some. I actually am probably one of the, I'll say the select few, but I actually really enjoyed going to speech therapy, even in the schools. And I loved going to Kristen after school because I felt like it was fun and I was working on my speech. And I didn't love the homework part, but I loved going to speech. And I was always in a group and during speech in the schools too. So I think some kids knew that I was going to speech, but no kids, I was lucky that no kids in elementary school were ever really mean to me about it.
Oh, good.
I never got made fun of, so I was pretty lucky, so, in the schools growing up.
Yeah, definitely pretty lucky, because, you know, of course, we hear about a lot of, you know, stories of, you know, older people, particularly that, you know, when they were coming up or when they were going into school, stuttering was so much more misunderstood that, you know, kids were cruel and picked on them and teased them and bullied them and whatnot. So that's good that you had a positive experience.
I had a really positive experience, though.
Yeah. What about at home? What was it like with your parents and with your siblings? How did they react? How did they respond?
They were always very, very supportive of me, actually. They're really involved with speech and therapy in general too. My mom, whether it was my mom taking me to a speech or my dad or my even sometimes my grandma and grandpa drove me to a speech. So everyone was very supportive and willing to do whatever they could to help or listen. Or I never had no non-supportive parents. They were always so willing to do anything for me, whether it was talking to teachers with me or anything like that. So they've always been super supportive, which is great.
Yeah. And how did you go about finding the particular private therapist, Kristen Camilla? How did your family find out about her, or, you know, figure out that was the place that you needed to go?
My mom, the story I remember that I was told recently, was my mom was, I think, at like a parent-teacher conference, and one of the boys down the hall, or down the road from my home, his mom and my mom were talking because my brother was of his friend. My mom was saying how her daughter stutters, and the mom was like, "Oh, my son goes to this therapist. You should call her." So then my mom called, and I remember going that first day to Kristen, and my mom loved her, and I also loved her, and then it just kind of worked out that she was a great therapist, obviously, we all know now. And it was a great experience, because she welcomed me and made me feel super comfortable in speech, and my mom comfortable in educating my parents and everybody, so he got lucky by the mom down the road, basically, by getting a referral from word of mouth, so we got pretty lucky.
Yeah, wow, I guess so. That's really cool. Do you still participate in therapy now?
I don't participate in therapy. I keep in contact with Kristen on occasion. If I ever need to ask her anything, I can call her or email her. I saw her a little bit last spring for some therapy, but we just keep in touch now. Mm-hmm. Basically, around after middle school, I kind of decided to be done with a speech on like a consistent basis, since I was really involved in the self-help group then, and I've been in speech since I was 8, so it's kind of like a burned out point where I was kind of accepting my speech and getting the support I needed from the self-help.
Mm-hmm. So what did your parents
group, so.
I'm sorry, I interrupted. Sometimes that happens when two people who stutter are talking to each other.
Right.
What did your parents think when you decided in middle school that you'd had enough? Were they okay with that?
I think so, yeah, because they know they knew I was in the speech since I was like 8, and I think they knew with stuttering too, you really need to be focused and 100% in therapy for stuttering to be effective too. Because if you're not 100% in, it may not be the most effective therapy, and that's not the best use of therapy time on either person's part.
Right.
So I think they were they knew I was getting support and accepting of my speech, and they knew that the door was open at Kristen's if I ever needed anything, and they trusted me that I would know when or if I needed support where to go. So they're kind of letting me on my own way to do what teenagers do. And if I stumbled, they would let me stumble, but they trusted that I knew what was best for me at the at time. So, but they always knew if I ever wanted to go back to speech, they would support me and all of it like that too, which is great. So I know if I ever want to go back to speech, they'll support me and understand that that I know I am ready and I know I need a therapy. So it's a good communication between my parents and me about everything. So
that's great.
They knew never to push anything on me, and I'm kind of stubborn, so I would do things on my own time, whether they agreed with it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So
have you been like that in like all parts of your life, kind of stubborn, or is it just related to the speech?
I'm pretty stubborn in general, so I think they know when to step back and when to give their opinion on things, but know that regardless, I'll do what I want to do, but I do take their opinion into consideration too. So they know me pretty well, so they know their limits.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but they're always very supportive of speech and my stuttering, and they would even as a child, they would, even if I would ask my mom to order food at restaurants, she would for me, even if she knew it was probably best for me to do it myself, but she would still do it if I asked her, and then we would practice, some days so I could get the courage to order food, and now I do order food, so going through that we went through the whole mom order food for me stage, and then I moved on to me ordering food now too, so she kind of went through all the stuff, whether she agreed with it or not, but So it's been pretty good with them. So yeah, I'm a really supportive family.
You also mentioned the word courage, that you know, like that you had to reach the point, you know, where you felt courageous enough to, you know, do some of those things on your own. Can you talk a little bit more about that? I mean, why is courage? Why did you use that word when you talked about, you know, your mom did some things for you when you just didn't feel like you had the courage yet? What does that really mean?
I think because I always felt like I would always wonder what people are thinking about me if I was stuttering or blocking during ordering food or whatnot. And I wasn't totally at the acceptance stage of stuttering yet. So I was more afraid that I would stutter and then what do I do next? So I was kind of also avoiding the situation then too. And I built up that courage by really support and just advertising my own stuttering and telling people that I stutter and stuff. So I kind of learned to be okay with my stuttering, and if I stutter, this person should wait for me to order my food too, and just be okay with stuttering in public and not always be worrying about what the other person's thinking or them trying to rush me through ordering my food too. So for me, I think it was a lot of what's the other person thinking, and that was worrying me and kind of made me step back a bit and have other people do stuff for me since I was so afraid of what people would be thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So,
do you ever still worry about that now? Worry about what people are thinking, or, you know, being judged?
I still think about it. I'm not going to say I think about it every day, but there are still days when I'm ordering food and I still do sometimes worry. But I'm at that point where I'm going to order what I want regardless if I stutter or not. And I'm okay with that stuttering and that other person should be respectful enough for me to finish what I want. So I still worry, but I don't let it stop me. And I know that there are a lot of people out there who will wait. And if I do have a bad day, I have so much support from other friends I've met in the stuttering community to pick me up from a bad day if something happens. So,
have you ever ran into...
Yeah, you can ask your question.
Yeah. Have you ever ran into a situation where somebody, you know, like hasn't waited or became impatient or, you know, said something negative or rude to you in a restaurant or a drive through or something like that?
I've had some people interrupt me at restaurants or finish my thoughts, but it's never been rude, and don't think they've ever done it on purpose. And I've never really called them out on anything like that, but I have had people interrupt me or finish what I am saying, which is frustrating, but I don't think, I'm not that kind of person to call someone out in the middle of a restaurant about my stuttering. So I just kind of let it be for the time being. But I've never had anyone make a rude comment to me, knock on wood, so far. So, what I'm extremely grateful for. So,
oh yeah, absolutely. So, how did you get involved with self-help in the stuttering community? How did you get involved?
Actually, 14 years ago, maybe now, Kristen actually told my mom about the Friends Convention in Minnesota, and it was their first conference, actually. And Kristen's like, oh, it'd be great for Val to go and the family. And then my mom brought it up to me actually been in. Like, you know, I think this would be a great place. And I was about, I think, 13 at the time. And I was kind of against the whole idea of going up to Minnesota for the weekend for a stuttering group. Because we were planning on going, I think, to Florida that summer. And I thought Florida vacation would be a whole lot more fun than Minnesota vacation. And then, but I talked to my mom more about it, and I knew it was important to her, and she was very interested in it. So so my whole family decided to go to the Friends Conference in Minnesota in 98, maybe? So when 14 years ago. Whatever it was, 14, maybe 96. It was many years ago. And it was our first conference, and it was really tiny. And all I remember was we parked our car, because we drove from Chicago to Minneapolis, and we're walking in the hotel, and I was looking around at all the cars in the parking lot, and Danny Murphy's family was also walking into the hotel at the same time, and Danny and I knew each other from Kristen Beach group that we were in, so I felt better walking into the conference knowing someone at least, so that was a nice comfort for me a little bit. And then as the weekend went on, I met Lee and Amy Johnson, and they were just so welcoming to my family and my brother and Danny's family that I just was like a 180, and I loved the convention. I told my mom I wanted to go the next summer, and then the rest is kind of history. If you say, and we've never missed a conference since then. So I'm one of the few people who've been to every Friends conference, which is exciting to me since I've seen it grow from a small 20-person group to a couple hundred now. So it's exciting to see all the kids grow. And I even remember the second summer was in Boston, and they announced that summer that the following summer was in Washington, D.C., and my mom already promised my brother and I that we'd go to Disney World the next summer, finally. And my brother and I were like, Mom, we'd rather go to D.C. with the convention instead of going to Disney World. So we ended up going to the convention instead of Disney World that following summer. So,
wow.
Those two summers was when I met, like, Jesse Caggiano and the Walton sisters, and we all became super, super close, and our friendships have just grown over the next 10 years, which has been great because they're some of the greatest friends I can count on no matter what. So their convention definitely kind of opened my eyes to how many other people stutter and their support out there. And there's so many speech therapists and parents and siblings and other people who stutter who are out there to support you and just be okay with your stuttering. I think that the self-help group really showed me to accept my stuttering and know that I'm not alone ever during this journey, per se. So the self-help group has just been an amazing experience for me, just, and now even being 25 and seeing the like eight-year-old kids, you know, at the microphone talking, and I know when I was eight, I would never be up at the microphone talking. So just seeing them all are so inspirational to me now. And I started this self-help group at 13, so I can't even imagine having that group at like eight, because it would be an amazing experience to like have. So, it's been amazing. I can't thank Friends enough for everything they've done to me and the friends they've given me. So,
yeah, I can hear like the passion in your voice as you're talking about it. So, it's. It must be really special, and especially to hear you say that, you know, you and your brother opted to go to a stuttering conference over Disney. That's like pretty amazing for kids.
Yeah. Yeah, we always, it just randomly comes up in different conversations. So at the convention, a couple families know that my brother and I were kids who picked Washington, D.C. over Disney World, but we had such great friends there that we didn't want to not see them again that next summer, and it was great for me to even see my brother forming different friends and stuff too, because he's not someone who stutters, but you can see that he was also learning and enjoying the people there too, which is great that my whole family actually got support there too. So it's kind of good for everyone and not just like me. So we're all kind of thrown with the convention then.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Initially, you know, what was it like for your brother's name is Steve, right?
Yes.
I mean, what was it like for him? I mean, you know, like, because you said like the first convention there was only like 20 people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So like, did he just kind of have to like find his own way, or did, you know, people try to make it comfortable for siblings, or what was it like then?
He kind of found his way and came with me different places, because, you know, I was still a little bit nervous, and he actually met a different boy there, and they became really good friends. And this boy also started, so he was kind of like hanging out with the whole group, and that's kind of how he was for the first couple of years. He would like be friends with everybody, and then as the years went on, him and he can be kind of help with the sibling workshops back then too, because he also had that sibling insight that us as people who better don't get. So he really kind of helped with those and the kids too, because he loves kids, and working with the kids were just fun for like him too. So he kind of found his own way with the siblings and the kids, and just kind of telling his own story and supporting me, and he kind of just hung out wherever they needed him, per se, I guess, for a bit. So he found places to hang out and tell stories, and yeah, he was always very comfortable there, I feel like, and never complained that he had to go, so.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. I mean, do you think he ever felt jealous? I mean, did you guys ever talk about that? I mean, I've always wondered, how does a sibling of somebody who stutters, you know, at that younger age when you're first getting involved, I mean, and you were having all that therapy and stuff. Do you know if he ever felt jealous, or did you guys ever?
We definitely never talked about it, so I don't know if he was actually jealous. My guess would be no, but that's just me making a blind guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I know he's always supportive of me, so he never said yes or no, and he enjoyed the conference and made a friend, so he kind of got to enjoy that aspect of it, I guess, too, since he was involved with being there, so he kind of got to be involved in a way. So if he was jealous, he had experiences too, but I don't think he was jealous, but maybe I am wrong. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Not anything we've really talked about. So.
Mm-hmm. And what was it like back then? Since you are one of the only few people that have been to all 14 conferences, what was it like when there was only like 20 people there? What did you guys do?
It was really small. I remember the first couple of years we had like kids workshop where we just talked and made t-shirts. It was really small, and we had the weekend activities at night at some local people's houses at their pool. We actually didn't start the whole dinner dance karaoke party till I think it was the fourth convention. It was actually in Chicago, and it was my mom's idea to get a DJ at the hotel to have dinner with, and then the karaoke dance party was kind of born from the fourth convention on. And that's been a staple ever since. But it was a lot more just hanging out at night and just kind of finding your own thing to do, actually. Mm-hmm. But the workshops were all really small, and the welcome was kind of small. It was a whole different experience. I remember one year in Washington, D.C., there was no teen room because they didn't have anywhere in the lobby. Didn't want the kids hanging out in the lobby all night, so we ended up hanging out in the women's bathroom, actually, because there was a huge bathroom with a lounge, and there was nowhere else for us to go to keep quiet. So all of us and the girls and the boys all just hung out in the women's bathroom because there was nowhere else to go at night. So we kind of just found our own fun because there was no teen room or food to hang out with. So we played a lot of card games back then too. So it was a little bit less structured, but it was fun.
Mm-hmm. What story?
Yeah, that was it's one of my favorite stories. Just knowing that we all hung out in the girls' bathroom because we had nowhere else to go. So and we were quiet there, so the hotel was okay with it, I guess. Because a bunch of 14-year-old kids can kind of loud, so you're quiet there.
Yeah.
So definitely grown.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, how did it begin to grow? I mean, was there a evolution? I mean, was it more word of mouth? I mean, how did it begin to grow each year?
I think a little bit of both, like the group, the word of mouth definitely helped. I answer. And then there's some families who kept coming back every year, and if they knew someone, then they would tell them. And eventually, this evolved into this bigger group. And there's more media now, and the internet also probably helps a whole lot. And just marketing and just word of mouth too. And then every year, it just kept getting bigger and bigger. Feel like. So it's been great to see how much it's grown from a group of 20 of us, hanging out, to now a group of hundreds of us hanging out and dancing together and eating dinner and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy thinking about the first couple of years being so small, and now there's so many kids there now. So it's like great to see that there's so many people reaching out for support now too. So. Because I didn't start until I was 13 when I found support, and now there's kids who are 6 and 8 and 10 getting support younger. So it is great to see if the numbers of the little kids grow too. So and all of us who are older now just sticking around too, like Ryan McDermott and Danny Murphy still goes, and the Walton girls are still going, and Jessie goes every year. So, so it's great to see that our little core group way back when is still there too.
Mm-hmm.
To support the younger kids who are, who are new. So it's great to see that this older group stayed, and now we have this younger group who will now one day be the older group.
Do you imagine there will ever be a time when you'll stop going to Friends?
I've thought about it, but I keep going back to I'm still a person who stutters, and they have support for the people who stutter. And I'm also a speech therapist, so I can always just go to Friends as a speech therapist aspect too. I can't imagine a summer of not going to the convention, so I think it would be a sad summer if I don't have the convention to go to in July.
Yeah.
Even if it had to be for like a day. It's been such a yearly summer. But vacation now that I can't imagine it not being my yearly summer vacation. So I can see myself always involved in some way. And as whether it be a person who stutters aspect or a speech therapist aspect of it all. So I'm pretty lucky that I can stay involved in either aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. So. Do you ever wonder or wish or miss the intimacy of hanging out in that women's restroom those many years ago?
That was a good group, but I like how much bigger we are now and how we have like a big group where I am able to welcome new kids and we all can hang out in the lobby now and still feels intimate to me because we have this new group and they're feeling how I probably felt so many years ago where they're feeling welcome in a group, and I'd rather make that group bigger and make more kids feel welcome and want to come back than just kind of be hidden away in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like the aspect that I can invite these new kids to a teen group to make them feel welcome and meet new friends.
Mm-hmm.
So I like how it's growing. I think it's a good size now because I still feel like friends is a pretty intimate group where you get to know. You can get to know a bunch of kids and parents and not feel overwhelmed by 1,000 people per se. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be overwhelming to me. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean because I try to get to both conferences, and I'm sure you're aware of the National Stuttering Association, and like they're probably going to have more than 700 people there this year. And that is very overwhelming because you don't get to see even a quarter of the people, and you really just don't be able to develop the relationships that you can in a smaller group. So I agree with you. I think that friends just has that special intimacy about it because it's so much smaller and people just generally know each other from just going every year. I think it's a perfect size.
Yeah, I think it's great. And I love walking in on a Thursday afternoon and seeing a family from the previous summer and knowing they came back, and I'm able to welcome them by their name, and it's just great to see so many families come back and then they remember you and they've seen you for 3 days their entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And they can remember you from the summer before. So I think it's a great sign, and it's intimate, and there's that. I like that the teenagers can talk to the 18-year-old, and they can also hang out with the kids that are 6 too, because they want to be that like role model too. So I like seeing how all the kids and teens and adults all help out and can relate to everybody else and support everybody. So.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's exciting to see everyone supporting and cheering everyone on during the whole weekend. And it just gives me, and I leave the weekend feeling so kind of happy and empowered that I've met so many courageous kids and adults. And I just leave like, wow, I'm surrounded by amazing people this past weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell my friends about it, and they're just like, the weekend, this year, like favorite weekend of the year. I'm like, yeah, it really is, and I can't explain what the whole weekend is unless you are there to experience it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always just asking me so many questions, like, what do you do there? Your friends, you're so close to so many people. And you see them once every year. I'm like, it's just a experience you can't describe, I feel like, so.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just come back and I'm like all happy for like so many weeks and I'm on like a friend high.
Does it ever get emotional, like at the friends conferences? I mean, everything you've talked about has been really, you know, positive and meaningful and impactful. But, you know, are there times when it does get really emotional and people are like, you know, it's not so positive?
I don't have a not positive experience. If I get emotional, and I do, there's always hearing like the parents speak or the closing ceremony type deal, and then just I get more emotional hearing the stories that the parents share, or the kids sharing their thoughts, what their parents thought the past weekend. I get more emotional then. I don't think I've ever had a real negative experience at the convention, so. But I do get emotional at the end hearing the parents share their thoughts to their kids and the kids sharing their thoughts with their parents. That always just makes me get emotional a bit. So that's probably the hardest part of the weekend is hearing these kids pour their thoughts out. Because it's amazing to hear them talk.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of like that myself. I can get choked up very easily, and I can get emotional and misty-eyed at something sad and something really joyous also, so it doesn't take much for me, so I just tend to get choked up easily when I see people getting so much out of the experience, and that's probably a big part of what brings people back year after year, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would definitely say, because you're just hearing all these even sad stories of how the parents were sad or worried about their kid, and now they aren't because they have hope. That just kind of chokes me up too, because you see this change in the parents' minds too, and that's just as emotional to me, because you see that these families leaving with a new hope and mind set too, which is great to be able to share my own story and have an impact on people's lives. That, you know, I can say I was going to grad school at the time for speech therapy, and they're like, oh my gosh, that's great, and then I feel like I can share my story and have them feel like they have hope for their child as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that just is emotional to me, knowing I can share my story and me achieving my goal and dreams, to have these parents also be able to think that and believe that their children will achieve their goals and dreams too.
Mm-hmm.
So I like being able to share my story, especially with the parents at the convention.
Yeah. Now, when you say hope, hope for what?
Because I've always remember hearing some parents and saying they're worried that their kid will hold back from something in school or college, and just knowing that, like, these parents hearing so many success stories of people who better who went for their dreams and achieved them, that they can see that there are people who didn't let their veterans stop them from their dreams, and that they can also feel like their kid will also achieve their dream and not let their veterans stop them too, because they have also heard these amazing success stories.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of said, I've talked to some parents who kind of are so worried about their kids being in high school and getting jobs, and kind of telling them my story that I got through high school was talking to teachers about my own speech and getting support, and I got through college, that, you know, these kids will be all right and get through high school and college, and what they're stuttering, like, can I gives them a success story to remember that stuttering doesn't stop people from achieving their goals. So.
Wow, what a nice way to put that, because it can sound so cliche when you just say, you know, it gives people hope, but the way you just described it, you know, it's almost kind of like that paying it forward type of thing. Like, you know, our experiences can actually help somebody else who's going through the same thing. And it doesn't sound cliche the way you just said it. You just said it beautifully, like, wow. That was really good.
And that's kind of why my future goal with speech therapy is to eventually work with people who stutter, because that is my passion of what the speech therapy, and so I can work with them, and so they can accept their stuttering, and then I achieve any goal they do want, because me going through so many years of speech therapy with Kristen, and knowing she was also a person who stutters and is an amazing speech therapist now, kind of she gave me the hope that I can do anything I want and dream of. So I kind of want to pay it forward to the future kids now that I am a person who stutters, and I went through speech therapy too, and went to college and got my master's, and they can do anything they want to. So that's kind of my pay it forward story, since Kristen was such a inspirational person to me, and I kind of want to be that kind of inspirational person to future kids as well. So just because I had such a great experience with a speech, and there's I've heard so many stories from kids who had not so great experiences with a speech therapy, that I want to give these kids a good experience with a speech therapy and their view of their own stuttering.
Well, I don't think you have to wait to be able to inspire kids who stutter. You're already doing that, Val. Absolutely, you're already doing that.
Thank you.
Winding down, you know, you're at the wise old age of 25 now, and you've been involved, you know, in the stuttering community for many years. What do you think of yourself today at 25 as a woman who stutters?
I see myself not as, I still know I do stutter, but I see myself more as a 25-year-old woman who is now going to be a speech therapist, who is just starting on my career path, who has a great supportive family and boyfriend and friends, and stuttering is just a part of me, and it will always be a part of me, and I'm a person who stutters, but that's not the whole part of me, because there's so much more to me that I'm going to be successful as a speech therapist, and I kind of see me as a 25-year-old girl kind of just starting out on my job and life, kind of. It's a new beginning now that school's done, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
And I have so many people supporting me through everything, so the stuttering is just a small part of me that I would never want not to be a part of me. So just because it makes me kind of who I am today, so, and it got me to where I am now, so I can't regret any of it or hope that it wasn't there, since I'm quite happy where my life is now. So I'm just like, I'm real ready to start life, I guess. And I stutter, so what the hey.
Wow. What a great way to end. I hope that you're proud of yourself, because I'm confident that there's so many people that are proud of you, and you're really touching lives, girl. And thank you for sharing your story and for, you know, being part of this podcast. I think a lot of people, particularly young people, are going to, you know, hear what you've shared and feel inspired and feel impacted. So thanks a lot.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.